I'd just like to welcome everybody. I'm Christine Jenkins, goodvibrationscoaching.com, and I'm really happy to welcome everybody on the call, whether you're on the phone, the webcast, or listening to the replay. You're very, very welcome. I know there's people from all over the world, I think, practically, on the phone or the webcast. So that's brilliant. And I'm really excited to have Ian as a guest on my weekly teleseminar calls. Some of you know him well, and for some of you, it's the first time to meet him. So I think it'll be a good introduction. I first came across Ian in about 1998 through his homeopathy taped seminars, which I'm sure a lot of other people did too, which felt like a godsend to me as a newly practicing homeopath at the time. And what really drew me to him was his ability to really simplify what had seemed so complicated and to take the fear out of homeopathy for me, which was just fantastic. I used to listen to the tapes in the car and was always inspired. And even my partner, who wouldn't be that into homeopathy, used to love listening to them, which I know is an experience. I think, Ian, you've had a lot of people have said, haven't they?
Apparently. I get inflicted on all kinds of people's partners all the time.
And they really enjoy it. So, and then I met Ian in person, and I think it was 2005. I think it was when he arrived through the mist to my house in the west of Ireland to lead to seminars, which we'd arranged by email. We'd never spoken to each other on the phone even. I'd heard him; he'd never even heard my voice or anything. And he arrived at the house, and we had two fantastic seminars here, which were really good. And that was the start of a great friendship and work in relationship and a journey together, because we've both been going in different ways away from homeopathy and different journeys through that time. And we've put on three seminars and a couple of retreats and a 9-day healer's journey together here. So we've worked together a lot and it's been brilliant. And he, you know, and anybody who knows him knows how gifty he is and what a great workshop and retreat leader he is. So with no further ado, we'll hand over to Ian. Actually, there is a bit of further ado. I just got just the logistics in case people didn't hear. Everybody's muted out because there's so many people. If you want to speak, then you raise your hand and you press *2 on your phone to raise your hand. If you're in the on the webcast, you can type questions in. There might be at some time, if it's appropriate, if Ian thinks it's appropriate, there might be a chance to do some work with him. If you're on the phone, you'd need to be to do that. Just to remind you that the call is recorded and is going to be available for replay, so just make sure that you're comfortable with anything you're talking about and know that. If you want to be anonymous, that's fine, but just so that you know that. Okay, so Ian,
hi.
Welcome,
everybody. And greetings from Devon, where it's about 2 degrees. I've got the fire going here. It's very cozy. And I have to say, this is a very civilized way to run a workshop, because I don't even have to go out of the house. It's amazing. As you say, we've got people all over the place. I really don't know where from exactly. But it is nice that we can connect this way. It's something that I've been wanting to explore for a while. Chris has been telling me, Ian, you need to get into teleseminars, and she knows what I'm like. I've been dragging my feet, so good for her. She sets it up so that all I have to do is show up, and she's taking care of all the rest. So thanks, Chris. If it wasn't for you, this wouldn't be happening. And you chose a topic for me as well, which was fantastic, and the topic is emotional healing. I don't know if you have got any specific questions you want to ask me about that, Chris, or shall I just start talking about it?
Yeah, if you want to just start talking, and then there's quite a few questions that people have typed in as well. So if you want to talk a little bit from your point of view, like what it is, what it means to you, and how, you know, and how you're working with that, and then I can lead into the questions.
Okay. It's been a thread that was running through my work, going all the way back to the beginning, really, because the first thing that I started using in the alternative healing world was flower essences, originally the bark flower essences. And I was very struck by Bartsch's observation that you have to pay attention to the psychological and emotional state of the person. That's what the essences were designed to address. And he was pretty adamant that if you addressed that, you could help on all the other levels as well. And subsequent research in flower essences has certainly shown that to be the case. So that was always with me right through my study of homeopathy, everything that I've done since. And during my homeopathy years of practice, one of the things that I saw occasionally come up, and as my practice went on further, became more frequent experience, was people who I'd worked with for a while, we got to know each other well, we built up a good relationship, the healing tended to go deeper over time, or we tend to start to work on the more psychological, emotional levels. And I realized that it wasn't enough just to throw remedies at people and to lead them to get on with it. Some people could do that fine, but there were other people who had strong reactions to the remedies. Sometimes the remedy will be a catalyst for suppressed emotions would start to be released by themselves. And often the person didn't know what to do with that. And to be truthful, I didn't know what to do with that either. It would freak them out. That in turn might freak me out. And I had to admit that my homeopathy training hadn't really equipped me to help people through those emotional storms. And it was only after a number of those experiences that I decided I needed to look outside of homeopathy and find other ways to work with this phenomena. One of the first places that it led me to was a therapy called Shen therapy. That's S-H-E-N, which is it's a hands-on technique. It's an energy body technique, fairly simple to learn. I went up to Edinburgh and did some training in it, and I also experienced it for myself. And by working with the energy body, you facilitate emotional release, spontaneous emotional release. Now, this was very powerful for me, and I saw it being very powerful for the people that I was working with, and was quite inspired by the fact that no remedies were even needed. If you do the technique correctly and you have a good presence that you brought to the work, the person had enough trust in the process and in you, then it seemed that the body was quite capable of releasing suppressed emotions by itself. And that insight kind of stuck with me, that realization that we don't have to force people to get their feelings out, and it's probably not a good idea to try and do so. On the contrary, we humans, it seems, are designed to spontaneously feel and release things in the way that youngsters do quite naturally. Certainly if you watch a 2 or 3 year old doing emotion, they feel it and they let it go. And usually it's very intense, it's very strong, but because they're not containing it in the body, it's also very short lasting. So they're able to process an emotion very quickly, and then they're on to the next thing. They're absolutely fine. There's no residue. They don't carry any of it forward to the next event. They're not building up this storehouse of suppressed emotion, which is then liable to get triggered by relatively trivial things. So I kind of had that realization a long time ago that somehow we have this ability to heal on an emotional level without much needing to be done. On the contrary, a lot of the things that we do actually take us away from that spontaneous self-healing release that would otherwise happen. My journey subsequently took me into working with Brandon Bays, who some of you may know through her journey process work. If any of you have read Brandon Bays' story, she wrote a very popular book called The Journey, describing her own self-healing from a physical disease. And the essence of the healing for her was going through the layers of suppressed emotion, allowing herself to feel it fully, and rediscovering a connection with her true self. And through that, as a side effect of that, if you like, there was a spontaneous healing of something which was said to be an incurable condition. So she then figured out how she did that and turned it into something that could be taught to other people. So I did a whole training program with Brandon. Again, it was very beneficial for me, even though I'd been having homeopathy and other things for many, many years. On an emotional level, those things hadn't really helped me that deeply. Whereas when I did the Shen therapy and then the journey work, suddenly I started to realize that this was a whole area of my life where I needed healing, and also that I could really benefit from that. I felt much more alive, much more myself. So obviously when you have that kind of experience, you want to share it with other people. So my work started to move away from just being a prescriber of remedies to more a facilitator of this kind of work. This became a key aspect of my work and has remained so ever since. other things that I realized along the way was how powerful emotional release work is in terms of its knock-on effects, the kind of beneficial side effects in other areas. So a lot of physical health problems are, we know now, are directly caused or held in place by suppressed emotion. But also the emotions are what keeps unconscious beliefs in place as well. So consequently, emotional release work is a crucial component if you want to work with people who have behavioral problems, relationship problems, problems with habits, addictions, these kind of things, compulsions, or simply it could be self-image or self-esteem issues. A person's got a negative belief about themselves, which is then being acted out over and over again. And to some extent, that's all of us. It's just a question of degree, the degree to which that's impinging on your life. But I started to realize the more I got into this work, just how crucial the emotional release part was for what I would call a deep psychological transformational healing as well as the physical aspect. There are other tools that I've studied and brought in, including the EFT, which a lot of people will know and be familiar with, emotional freedom technique, which was made popular by Gary Craig, and something which, when I first came across, it seemed way too simple and too good to be true, like a lot of people have that initial reaction, I think. But my strategy is always try it before you dismiss it, and I began to try it and saw some really astonishing results with it. So EFT is another thing that I've incorporated into my work. And then more recently, the release work took me more into the psychological realms. I studied particularly the psychology of Jung, Carl Jung, and some of the post-Jungian psychologists, and got more interested in this thing that Jung terms the unconscious. We have the personal unconscious and also the collective unconscious, which is a term that he himself coined. And I was amazed when I looked in, I read Jung's autobiographical book, which for those of you who've never read it, I would highly recommend. It's called Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. And it's one of the few books written by Jung which are, I would say, are readable by the average person like myself. When I first tried to read some of his other stuff, I couldn't get near it for many years. But this one is
it is
challenging, to say the least. This one's accessible. And there's a very interesting connection that Jung made. He said somewhere in that book, he says, to the extent that I manage to translate the emotions into images, that is to say, to find the images which were concealed in the emotions, I was inwardly calmed and reassured. Had I left those images hidden in the emotions, I might have been torn to pieces by them. And what he was describing was a very critical period in his own life when he was really discovering what the unconscious was about. And it was through allowing himself to go really into his own depths for the first time in his life, he discovered that there was this vast storehouse of images and even characters, personalities, people, creatures, symbols, all kinds of things. It was a living world which he entered. He allowed himself to enter. But in order to do so, he had to go through this terrific terror. So whenever he got close to it, he would have a panic, literally a panic attack. He would break out in a sweat. He was shaking with fear. But he had this inner knowing that he had to go there anyway. And one day he just let himself fall through. And that's literally how he describes it. He said, I let myself fall. I let myself drop. And he describes it very vividly in this book. And he basically fell to what appeared to be like an underground place. And of course, it was his internal world that he was describing. But when he was in it, it was as real as anything else. And what Jung led me to when I read this was the fact that the emotions can be a gateway. If you really allow yourself to experience a feeling rather than stay just one step away from it, but if you really allow yourself to go through it, it will often take you to a place that is unexpected, but is also very valuable, is very rich. And different people will experience that in different ways. One of the post-Jungians who's explored this very well and produced what for me was a very useful map of working in this terrain was Arnold Mindell. And he's written about 20 books on related topics, but his first one was about the what he called the dream body. And Mindell had this idea that the unconscious, which is the bigger part of ourself, is trying to express itself and also transform itself in lots of different ways all at the same time. And he called these different ways channels. So he said it's a bit like having different channels on the TV. And what happens when a process begins, a self-healing process begins, if you allow it to express itself fully through one channel, what happens is it switches to another one. So, for example, if you let yourself feel fully, often images would spontaneously arise. And that happens for anyone. This is exactly what Jung, of course, had described. But it might not be images. For some people, it would be a voice. You might hear something inside. For someone else, it might be a spontaneous body movement. And the body often has the need to express something in a particular gesture, or sometimes a person will start to contract into almost a fetal position quite spontaneously. I've seen other people go into yoga type postures, which they wouldn't be capable of doing under normal circumstance. But when they release the energy that's been trapped in the body itself takes over and something else starts to happen. So I've learned a lot from these people of the not just the significance of emotional release work on its own account, but also how it ties in with so many other processes. And we can't think about emotional release work in isolation anymore, in the same way as we can't think about psychology in isolation, or we can't treat the physical body in isolation. The wonderful thing to my mind that's happening now in psychology is that the mind and body split is being healed. It's all been pulled back together. And this is really, it's a very exciting time in healing, because we're discovering that the body-mind as a whole is quite capable of healing itself, and in fact is programmed to do so. All we have to do is create the circumstances for that to happen, which we could talk about in a little bit, what those kind of preconditions are. But that to me has been the kind of more exciting discovery of the last few years, and a lot of these things that I've been excited to discover have been the things that I've been trying to bring into my workshops and my retreats. Because another thing that I found is that this work is very conducive to working with a group. When you have a small group and there's a field effect that's generated by that group, there's a kind of shared healing intention, a lot more happens in that space than perhaps would be able to happen if a person's working just one-to-one or even on their own. So I've also come to value that as well, how the group field effect is very helpful for this kind of work. So that's my pre-ramble, should we call it. And I'm going to stop there and we'll see what questions we have. And
what's the most practical way to process my shadow? One question come in.
Most practical way to process my shadow.
I know you work quite a bit with the shadow.
Oh, I see the question. That's from Naima in Florida.
Yeah.
Isn't this amazing? Hi, Naima. So that's a good question. It's also a difficult question. I don't know if you're a homeopath, but I like Jeremy Scher's take on this. He said somewhere when I was doing some homeopathy training with him, he said, you marry your aggravation. And I think what he meant was that we're already attracting into our life the very thing, the very person or people, the very situation, life situation that we need for our growth, for our healing at any moment. And I've really come to appreciate that and to trust that that's true. So for me, the best way to work with what Jung called a psychological shadow, which is simply one of the terms for the hidden parts of yourself which are influencing you. That obviously includes suppressed emotions for most of us. Just about everybody has emotions which are in the shadow because they've been judged negatively. If not by you, then by somebody else. So I would say the most practical way to go is to use what you have in your life already. You don't necessarily have to go a long way to find something which is going to put you in touch with your shadow. Usually your partner will do it for you, or your children will do it for you, or your mother or mother-in-law will be doing it for you. It's a question of making use of those things which are affecting you, which are aggravating you, the people that you find difficult to get along with, the ones who are able to say just the right words that pushes your buttons, rather than getting caught in blaming those people or trying to avoid them or trying to get rid of them from your life. You've got to be willing to step back from all of that and make use of them, and to say there's a reason why this person's in my life, and there's a reason why they have the ability to get to me, and that is to do with something in me. It's not necessarily to do with them. And as soon as you start to turn that equation around and be willing to work with it in that way, then I think you're given the means, you're given the tools that you need once you have the willingness.
So the willingness to be open to that's a crucial thing.
Yeah, and also it's having that perception shift that allows you to see the things that are in your life as being purposeful and meaningful, rather than being a victim of them. You turn it around and you say, well, there's a reason why this person is in my life and why they're niggling me. And they're going to keep niggling me until I get a handle on what that is inside myself. And if all I do is get rid of them, someone else is going to show up who's got the same quality, and probably they'll do it even better than this one. So there's a certain
yeah.
point when you realize that, you know.
Until you really get it.
Until you really get it, yeah. Usually it's like it's an exaggerated version, the next one that comes. So,
what are the ways you'd work then? Take it back to the body and see what's happening in the body when that happens, if you're around somebody who's really bringing up those things for you. Would you?
Absolutely.
Would that be something?
And this is crucial, and it's one of the simplest things, but it's also one of the easiest things to miss and to neglect, is the realization that we store feelings in our body. We hold on to them with the muscles in the body. When I studied Shen therapy, I first came across this concept, and it was a totally new concept for me. They even had a name for it in Shen therapy. They call it the auto-contractile pain reflex, or pain response. And the idea being is that when you have a painful emotion, an emotion which is uncomfortable, which you're trying not to feel, which is most of them, actually, the body itself has become habituated to trying to make that emotion small. So we tend to squeeze the muscles, particularly in the torso, so in the abdomen, in the chest, in the stomach, and sometimes in the throat. We contract those muscles, and that has the effect of holding on to the feeling that we're trying to get rid of. So body awareness is very important. You've got to be able to recognize where in your body you're holding on to something. So when something upsets you, somebody makes you feel angry or sad, or you feel guilt, or you feel fear, whatever it is, it's a very good starting place is not to ask why you're feeling it, but to ask where. It's a much more useful question. What that does, it actually grounds you into your body. It takes you away from your head into your body, and you can start to work with it then as a sensation, which is real. It's something real. And you don't have to know ahead of time what that should be feeling like, because your body will tell you what it feels like to you.
And do you think, would it feel appropriate to you to maybe talk us through a release process now, a general one with everybody?
Like how to do that, that kind of thing we're talking about. Yeah, sure. I mean, for me, it's the simplest way of doing what I would call straightforward emotional release work, is just to take your awareness into your body, and specifically into the torso area of your body. And you could do that right now. And all that requires is to just drop your awareness from the thinking place and just let it drop into your body, and simply notice, without needing to do anything about it, just notice if there's any place in your body that feels tighter than the rest, that feels tense, that it feels like you might be holding something, and just notice where that is, but without even trying to relax it. Just bringing awareness to it is crucial. The mind is so keen to do something that it's very difficult for people to learn this, because it's a not doing. And in essence, it's a very simple thing, but we're so conditioned to do something, we want to get on and do something, that for many of us, we have to unlearn that first of all. So this is more like a meditation practice, really. And the practice is to take your awareness into your body, notice where you're holding, and let that be okay. Just let yourself hold, but with awareness. And an interesting thing happens when you do that. When you bring awareness to something that you were doing unconsciously, you've already changed it. So that's the same discovery that the physicists had in the 1930s when they realized that when they conducted an experiment with a certain intention, it changed the outcome of the experiment. Well, that's true of us also. So as soon as you bring the intention to just bring awareness to what's happening in your body without trying to fix it, without trying to make it go away, just pay attention to it. And the next thing you can do is to notice what kind of an area that's covering. So if there's a place that feels different to the rest, maybe it feels a little numb, maybe it feels heavy, maybe it feels tight. Well, how big or small is it? Where is it exactly? Could you cover it with your hand, or is it bigger than that? Or is it like a small, tight area, like a tight fist? Or is it even smaller, like a golf ball? If you had to describe it to someone else, how would you describe it? And it also helps to close your eyes as you're going, if you're bringing your awareness internal, it's helpful to close your eyes. And if an image comes to you that corresponds to that sensation or that feeling, just let it come to you and pay attention to it. So if it had a corresponding image, what would it look like? And the trick here is to trust whatever comes. It might not make any sense rationally, but to the body it will make perfect sense. I've had people describe bodily sensations in the weirdest terms you could imagine. And as long as I've trusted that it was the right thing, and my job usually as facilitator is just to persuade the other person to trust it. To say, just trust it, however nonsensical it seems, just let it come to you as it comes. And if the person allows that image to come, when you focus on the image then, it will have a corresponding effect on the feeling. So if you do get an image, if you give the image some close attention, that image will also start to activate the feeling that's there. Not everybody gets an image, and that's okay. You might also find that you want to hold your body in a certain way. So you might feel more comfortable putting your hands over a certain place in your body, in which case I would encourage that you do that. Spontaneously follow what the body's trying to do itself. Some people feel like rocking themselves gently, or sometimes not so gently. Some people put their hands on their legs and start rubbing their legs without realizing what they're doing, or playing with their fingers. Again, just letting yourself do what you feel like doing, but doing it with awareness. And by slowing it down a little bit and noticing what you're doing, again, what you're doing is you're starting to activate a process which has been happening in the background unconsciously, but you're bringing awareness to it and you're going with it rather than blocking it. So these are some of the things that you can start to do for yourself. I make it a practice when I go to bed at night, and it's time to just relax and get ready for sleep. When I lie down, I just make it a practice just to notice, where do my hands want to rest on my body? Just let my hands rest somewhere spontaneously. And I just put my awareness to that place underneath where my hands have spontaneously gone to. So it might be on my abdomen, my solar plexus, might be on my chest. So I just put my awareness there. I'm trusting that my hands know the place that I need to go to. And I just let my awareness follow. And I just notice what I'm feeling there. I notice what the sensation is. And I let myself feel it. And that's the simplest form of emotional release that I can teach anyone, is just to go with what's already there and to allow yourself to feel it without trying to do anything, without trying to get rid of it or anything else. Now, there's lots of supplementary techniques for the people for whom that doesn't work. But that's the optimum. It's the most, it's the Tao of emotional release. It's to do the least.
It's amazing how powerful it is. Something so simple, isn't it? It's incredible.
It can be. If you just drop into your body and you just stay with what's there, things will start to happen spontaneously that you'd never anticipated.
Mm-mm.
And not everyone is able to do that, or not everyone is able to notice the subtleties there. And that's fine. That's why we have other refinements for other people. And one of the simplest refinements is to notice, and again, this would appeal to the homeopaths, is to notice what's there as a sensation and to deliberately exaggerate it a little bit, to amplify it. And again, this goes against the kind of instinct of the mind, which is always to try and do the opposite. If the body feels tense and tight, the mind will say, relax it. If the abdomen feels kind of scrunched up, the body will say you should stretch back and open it. But if you think about it from the homeopathic perspective, we go with what the body's trying to do, always. We match it with a similar energy. And that works for emotional release also beautifully. So if someone says it feels very tight here, I say, well, could you let it be a little bit tighter? And immediately they do that, something starts to happen. Or if it feels very heavy in the chest, say, just let it be as heavy as it wants to be. Just let it get even heavier. Imagine it getting heavier now and see what happens. So again, by going with what the body instigated, if you follow the lead of the body, it will take you someplace. It might surprise you.
So that's the acceptance, the amplification. What's the other A?
Awareness.
There's three. Awareness.
Yeah, those are the three initial tools that we can use to facilitate emotional release anywhere. And
there's a few people asking about severe pain and trauma, and you know, a real tangled feeling. Would those the emotional release there you've talked about, have you seen that help with severe trauma and pain, depression, bereavement?
It can, but some people will need other things also, of course. There's some very good work done by an individual called Peter Levine. His first book, I think, was called Waking the Tiger. Very, very good book. And he's written some very good subsequent follow-up books. And he studied trauma from the perspective of biology, really. Initially, he studied what animals do when they've been traumatized and realized that trauma, as we experience it, is again stored in the cells. It's actually stored in the muscles. And animals have a way of literally shaking themselves free of trauma. An animal that's been wounded or has been hunted, for example. It wasn't killed, but it was almost killed or thought it was going to be killed. So all that fear has been trapped in the muscles. But then the animal will get up once the threat has passed. The animal will get up and shake itself. And it's like a shudder that goes through the whole body of the animal, literally shake out the fear. I've seen a dog do that almost got killed.
Yeah, Eckhart Tolle has a great story about that with the ducks as well, doesn't he?
That's right.
Eckhart Tolle has a great story with that, with the ducks getting angry, shaking off the anger after a fight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. So sometimes with severe trauma that's locked into the body, we have to do something that's a bit more physical. We have to include the physiology. Some people need to shake it out, literally. Sometimes, though, it needs to be very, very gentle. The main thing is to create a safe space where the person feels safe enough to let themselves feel it. And we often can't do that on our own, particularly if it's an emotion like fear or terror, something of that kind. Whenever you get close to it, obviously the terror gets reactivated, and who wants to go there? Nobody wants to feel that again. And bear in mind that when you get close to the feeling, it will often start to stimulate memories. So the memories that are associated with it will start to come into consciousness also. That's the reason, one of the main reasons we don't go near those painful feelings is because we don't want to trigger those painful memories, and vice versa. You know, it's the same reason why we don't go in that drawer and look at that photograph because we know that it's going to trigger a painful emotion. So again, it's that relationship between images and emotions. It's a very powerful one, but that we can work with that creatively. But if someone, for example, has been subject to severe trauma or abuse or something of that kind, generally it will need a facilitator that they trust. You need to be in the presence of someone that you trust who can hold the space for you. And when you have that loving presence of someone who you really trust, you can allow yourself to go into those feelings and to release them. The other great technique that's done wonderful things in this is EFT, Gary Craig and some of his colleagues, they did amazing work with veterans of the Vietnam War, for example, people with what's now called post-traumatic stress disorder, phobias, panic attacks. Sometimes for they'd had it the problem for several decades. Some of these people, the whole thing was resolved in a couple of sessions. And it's just amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, things that years of therapy, psychological therapy, hadn't healed. But by working directly with the energy body, which is what EFT does, so the EFT is a little different. It's not requiring you to go directly into the feeling. You're tapping meridian points and releasing the energy charge that way. So the energy that's got caught up in that emotion is released, the flow of energy is restored, and the healing can come about that way. So it's a little bit more of kind of backdoor technique, very good for people who've been severely traumatized.
There's a question here. For men, what do you think of physical release, such as smashing things privately, of course?
Yeah, it can be helpful.
The physical.
I think it can be helpful, but I think its usefulness is limited. Because smashing things I would put in the same category of shouting and screaming, which is to do with expression. And oftentimes we express in order to get something off our chest. We often also express in order to let other people know how upset we are. But there's a difference between expressing something and really experiencing it in your body. And sometimes we express in order to distract ourselves from the feeling that's happening in our body, that's trying to happen in our body. If we're doing that, it's not going to help. But if you go around smashing something in a safe environment, hopefully, and at the same time you're really connecting with the feeling in your body, then it can help. So this will be the basis of some therapies where, you know, people would use pillows, cushions, that kind of thing, and really have, you know, let the person really let rip. For someone who's suppressed all their anger all of their life, it might be useful for them to be able to just let rip one time and feel what that feels like. But if they keep doing it over and over, I find it's diminishing returns. So it might help them to get loosened up initially, but the main thing is to really allow yourself to feel the sensation that's in the body, and that's often missed. If people get too caught up in smashing things and shouting and screaming, that oftentimes they're not realizing they're still not connecting with what the body's trying to do, what the body's really trying to feel. That seems to be the crucial part from the body's point of view.
I always remember when you talk about the difference between expression and suppression. And then the third way being release. That made a huge impact on me when you first talked about that, because I didn't know really there was another way and would have always thought expression was better than suppression.
Yeah, this is new information.
And
for
people locked into expression.
Yeah, or suppression. Yeah. We alternate between the two.
What a path is it? Somebody asked a question here about healing past life experiences. Is this necessary to fully realize your true self? And asking that question.
Is it necessary to release past life experiences in order to realize your true self?
About healing past life experiences. Is this necessary to fully realize your true self?
Who knows? I would like to say. I don't know. I think for some people it seems to be a necessary part of their healing journey, but I certainly wouldn't say it's necessary for everybody. For me, it's a different map for looking at the whole life process. And for some people it's a map that works beautifully. For some other people it's a place where you can get very stuck, and it can become again a distraction from what you need to be addressing in this life. So it's very individual, I think. I wouldn't dismiss it, but I wouldn't say it's necessary for everybody.
Is there somebody there with their hand up? Yeah.
I don't know how you can tell that, Chris.
Huh?
I said, I don't know how you can tell that. Are they waving or drowning?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to unmute you.
Oh.
They're waving. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I don't know. Are you in New Jersey?
Yes, I am. I have a question for Anne regarding trying to help someone with autism who is detached from the world to a certain extent, who does not like to be touched, but and reacts sometimes violently. What tools do you have to help a 10-year-old with these problems?
Again, I would direct you specifically to the work of Peter Levine. I mentioned him earlier. His first book was called Waking the Tiger. And he's written subsequent
books. There's methods that I can actually do surrogately.
Yes, I don't know about surrogately, but there's things that certainly the parent or the carer of the child could implement. So, you know, they're not things that would necessarily need specialists. He's done a lot of work on traumatized children, and he's found that very simple things which you wouldn't necessarily think would be overly traumatic could be a tonsillectomy, he gives, is a very common example. Some sensitive children will be deeply traumatized by that. And that trauma will often express itself as aggressive behavior, or what we then call just a problem child, a difficult child, or ADHD it would be labeled these days. He said these are typical ways that the child will express or will display a response to being traumatized earlier in their life. And often the trauma happened at a young age, where so they're not able to make the connection. They're not able to verbalize what it was about. Another common thing he talks about is nightmares. Children suddenly start getting nightmares, or they get phobic about going to certain places or doing certain things. And he gives you good techniques for working with these. So I think something like that, where the child's displaying autistic behavior or overly aggressive tendencies, have a look at Peter Levine's work. That would be my suggestion.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, very welcome. Very just. Anybody else? If you have any questions, if you'd like to, I'm offering this, Ian. Is that okay? If anybody would like to work with you, is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah, if anybody would like to take the opportunity. If you're on the webcast, you can dial in if you want to and come onto the call for this part of the work. If you did want to do something with Ian. Just going back to the questions, because there's still a couple more here, I think is...
I see one there from Bernadette.
About the tangled feelings.
Can you suggest ways to release trapped feelings in the body? I can feel a tangled mess of old feelings in my chest. And so far, accepting them has helped. Is there anything else I can do to help myself release them? Well, it sounds like you're on the right lines there, Bernadette. I don't know if we can get Bernadette on the call, can we? Is that possible?
If you want to, if you can come on the call and want to type in, Bernadette, then...
I don't know if she's on the call
that.
Or just... she might
no, she's
only
on
be
the
on
webcast.
The, she's only
on the
webcast.
On the webcast.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so, as far as I know.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, just to answer the question generally, it sounds like you're on the right lines already. Accepting them, you found, has helped. That's the first thing, is to bring acceptance, not to judge what you're feeling. But the second thing you could try would be the amplification technique. So putting your awareness in whatever feeling is there. You've described it quite well. You've already said that it's you've got the location. You're feeling it's trapped in your chest. So you know where to put your awareness, and then become aware of what it actually feels like as a sensation. If you had to describe that sensation to me or to someone else, how would you describe it? Is it tense, tight, heavy? Is it like a pressure? Is it burning? Is it, you know, it can be 100 different ways. So you've got to really go into your own body to be able to describe that as a sensation. And once you have it in the language of...
I think she's going to call in. I think Bernie's going to call in.
Okay, so if she calls in, we can talk to her.
Yeah. So I'll see in the... whilst waiting for... well, there's a question as well just coming in. In the case where a person's been raped and much therapy and homeopathy has been done, yet she feels that on a cellular level, the trauma still remains and can be triggered if life becomes overwhelming.
Yeah.
What can
happen
there?
That's definitely an area where releasing that trauma from the body is a major part of the healing. But one of the things that we have to respect is that the body holds on to feelings for good reason, as well as, we could say, bad reason. So the bad reason for holding on to feelings is because we've been conditioned not to feel them. So we all get told, you know, don't be sad, don't be afraid, don't be angry, etc. That, to my mind, is not a good reason to hold on to something. But when we've been traumatized and we carry a wound inside, there is a natural mechanism that takes place whereby we protect ourselves from future hurt, future wounding. And that has to be respected. And consequently, it's not possible for someone just to open themselves to that hurt and to let themselves feel it. We have to tread very, very gently with a person like that. The main requirement there, I would say, is for the therapist or whoever's working with that person to really develop and build on the relationship. The healing relationship is a large part of what will help in that situation. It needs to be a relationship that's cultivated over time and a bit of trust. One of the main things that gets damaged, if you like, from that kind of experience is trust. It could be trust with men. It could be trust with anyone. But part of the healing is reestablishing that trust in oneself and then in other people. And oftentimes a therapeutic relationship with a practitioner is the kind of, it's the training ground, if you like, for the other relationships in the external world. So it really, the onus is then on us as practitioners to develop our own presence so that we can be non-threatening, we can be accepting of what's there, but we have to be extremely patient. If I'm at all pushy with someone like that, if I'm at all impatient to get things moving or whatever, that person's unconscious mechanisms are going to be up immediately. The defense mechanisms are going to be up. So it requires a very, very gentle approach. I think gentleness is one of the keys working with someone who's had that kind of trauma in the past. And if you yourself are not able to bring that gentleness, then the person won't be able to work with you. They'll only be able to work with you up to a certain point. And beyond that point, they won't be able to go. And I think we have to recognize that sometimes, that we've reached the limits of how far we can go with someone. And that's as much to do with where we are at that moment as to do with where they are at.
Yeah, and I think if you're doing that kind of, what I found it, like working with people, it's just so important to keep checking in yourself with your own body, what's coming up for you and what resistance there might be there, and do your own releasing.
Absolutely.
And hearing where the things are coming in.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chris. Because if I'm being affected by what that person's bringing to the interview, but I'm not acknowledging that, and I'm not bringing it into awareness, as you say, and releasing what it's touching in me, that's going to block the healing also for the person that I'm working with. Yeah.
Yeah, so things are going to come up. It's just a question then of clearing them, isn't it, and releasing. Bernie,
exactly.
If you are on the line, can you star 2, and then I'll know who you are, and I can unmute you. If you press star 2, and then I can unmute you if you are there. That would be great. And oh, here we are. Okay, I'm unmuting Bernie now. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
There.
Hello.
Hello, Christine.
Hi.
Hello,
Bernadette. Hi, how are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Bernie. Is that you that put the message on the webcast earlier about feeling the tangled mess of feelings in your chest? Is that you?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Okay.
You'd have
met on a retreat a while back.
I met you in Dundary Park a few years ago.
Ah, you came to Dundary, yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a while back now, a few years ago. And Christine was there too. So I think that was about three or four years ago.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was a while ago.
Like,
so what are you finding, Bernie? Tell me what's happening.
Well, like I described, I recently stopped working and, left my career, and I'm taking time out, and, you know, I kind of finished a long-term relationship, and all that's good. But I feel like there's layers of emotions releasing. I've been free now for the last 5 months. I've been doing fairly well, but what I notice is all I can describe is like a tangled mess of something in the chest with different strands coming out in different directions, like it's unraveling. And I notice it's extremely stubborn. It's like trying to dislodge like a stubborn rock or something. It just, there's a sense of stubbornness.
Right.
So I'm not fully sure if I can do this on my own, really. And that's really the question. Yeah, so I really, up to now, I feel I've been doing okay, but I actually feel now that perhaps I'm stuck.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there that I can offer. The first one is sometimes we just need to have that mirror of another person to hold the space for us, and I still need that as often as you might, so there's nothing, there's no shame in that. There's nothing unusual about that. I think that this work is much easier with a facilitator. Having said that, you can do a lot by yourself, and particularly if you practice it, I think the body gets the hang of it after a while. So it's like anything. If you're willing to practice, initially it will seem like you're not getting very far. But if you keep practicing anyway, after a while, the body's own release faculty will start to kick in. So I know people who have successfully done that, and they've done some great healing work by themselves. So if you can't get to work with anybody, I would say press on anyway. But a couple of other things, just picking up on a few of the words that you used there. The first one was stubborn. Now, what that suggests to me is that you might be trying a little bit too hard.
Okay.
And that's often one of the things that stops the release process dead in its tracks, is that we try and make it happen. And what we're doing there is, yeah, we get impatient, or we try and force something to be released that actually is not ready to be released. Or sometimes we just have enough of it and we say, you know, I've felt this one enough, so it should be gone by now. And of course it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we try and insist that the body releases one feeling, and actually the body's not interested in that one right now. It's got another one that it's dealing with. Thank you very much. So we're a bit out of sync with what the body's trying to do. The second word you used was stuck. Now, interestingly, that is also a feeling. And what the mind does with stuck is it tries to free itself. It tries to break free from stuckness. But again, the homeopathic approach is to say, well, let it be stuck. Let it be as stuck as it wants to be. If it wants to be tangled like a tight ball right now, can you let that be okay?
Okay.
And that's often the... You know, that can often be the freeing agent, if you like, is bringing acceptance to the thing that you've been resisting. So usually we get stuck because we're resisting something that's happening. And it might be that what's happening is stuckness right now. So you just have to be willing to let that be part of the process. Say, okay, let it be as stuck as it wants to be. Go ahead, be as stuck as you like, body.
Okay.
And you can even amplify. Yeah, you can even amplify the stuckness.
I can try that.
It's sort of messaging of your brain a bit, this idea, because it goes completely against what your mind would tell you you need to do in that situation. But actually, it's going with what the body's trying to do. If the body's really adamantly holding on to something in that moment, I would say let it. Encourage it to hold on even more.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bring that... If you bring that to completion, then something will give. Something will start to shift.
Okay.
Is that any help?
I can try that in. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I can try that. I do notice when things are releasing, I sometimes feel like pins and needles spreading across my body.
Yes.
That's the kind of sensation I feel. I don't know if that's familiar to anybody.
Yeah,
everybody
different people get it in different ways, but you will learn to trust your body's way of letting you know. Most people feel a sense of maybe lightness or a relief. If you've been holding something for a long time and you let it go, it's a natural sense of relief. Some people feel there's more room in there. It feels a bit more spacious. Some people feel a bit more open inside. It's different for different people. And some people feel it as an energy that moves, that dissipates out. Some people feel warmth where it was cold, or vice versa. So again, you have to trust your own body's experience is the right one, you know.
Okay, Ian. Thanks very much. Thanks, Christine.
Thanks for
joining
us.
You're welcome, Bernie. Thanks a million.
Okay, thanks a million.
Thanks, Bernie. Thanks. Bye. I'll mute you off now again, Bernie.
Okay.
We've a few more minutes before the end. There's just a couple of questions here. What's the difference between focusing on a problem to solve it versus focusing on the problem to attract more of it? An example is a long-term problem with the authorities or a money issue-related problem. So focusing on a problem to solve it, the focus...
I might be misunderstanding, but it's a little bit off topic, is it?
I think slightly, but I imagine it's like to be focusing, because you're talking about the feeling and the body and the sensation and the focus there, I imagine. My first reading would be the intention behind what you're doing would be crucial.
Yeah. Well, the intention behind release work obviously is not to have more uncomfortable feelings. We're not trying to create more suffering. There's enough already. But I think the crucial thing is to bring acceptance and awareness to what actually is. And this is what Byron Katie in her work, if some of you are familiar with her work, she calls it stopping the argument with reality that most of us have most of the time. So the truth is, if you've got some discomfort in your body or you've got some issue that's happening in your life, the truth is it's happening. And if it's bothering you, that's the truth in that moment. And oftentimes we try and work around that truth. We try and deny it. We try and avoid it. We try and amend it. We try and get it to show up differently. But the truth is relentless. And the body is relentless also. It has that quality of persistence, and it will keep putting us back in the same place until we surrender to it, basically. So for me, that's not about giving yourself more problems than you already have. It's simply acknowledging the reality. So if the reality is you've got a lot of shame in your body or a lot of guilt or whatever it is, that's the truth for you in that moment. But by surrendering to it and allowing yourself to feel it, you can complete it. You can bring it to completion, and then you can be free of it. As long as we resist it, I think it was Jung himself who said, what we resist persists. And this is one of the great truisms of all healing work, as far as I can work out. So, if we try and sugarcoat it and pretend it's not happening, we get to keep it. So for me, it's a very practical thing, and being willing to accept things as they are. Accept your feelings as they are, accept your life as it is in any given moment, is the necessary precursor for changing it.
It's a huge thing to do that, isn't it? It's crucial, but it's once you've done that, then you have a chance to just be and breathe a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. As another just quick, it's a quick question or not, but how would you help someone with gerontophobia?
What phobia? Germ?
Gerontophobia, or is it germophobia? I don't know what it is. It's spelled gerontophobia, gerompho-phobia. But is it germophobia? It's not spelled that way. I don't know what it is.
I'll take it that that's maybe a fear or phobia of germs, something of that kind. I'm guessing that that's what it is. Well, initially, something like that, I would investigate. I would get behind what that's about, because mostly we're not afraid of the things that we think we're afraid of, in the same way as we don't really want the things that we say we want. There's usually what's called a hidden agenda there. So I would ask the question, I would maybe ask something like, what's the worst that can happen there? What is it that you're really afraid of? If someone's afraid of germs, they're not afraid of germs per se. They're afraid of what they think the germs might do to them, or something, and what that might mean for them. And that will be different for different people. So I'd want to get a more specific handle on what that phobia is really about. In terms of the release part, though, that would be the same with anything. If the person's got intense fear or phobia about anything, then fear is an emotion which we store in our bodies. And again, it's one that we're habituated to not feeling. We try not to be afraid. We've been told not to be afraid probably 1,000 times. But it can be very freeing just to let yourself be as fearful as you are. And just to notice where in your body you're holding that fear. And just to acknowledge it and let it be okay. Let yourself be a scaredy cat. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, stop resisting
yeah.
it. And just say, okay, I'm afraid. Where in my body am I holding that fear? And just bringing acceptance to it is a powerful thing.
Yeah, which I think there's a question here which I missed, actually, which has come in earlier. What do I do, from Leia, what do I do when I'm paranoid and awkward? Which I think you're actually answering now.
Yeah, if you're on your own and, you know, there's no help available, at least you can do that. You can attempt to bring, first of all, ground yourself in your body awareness. Bring yourself into your body. So if something's happened in your mind which is freaking you out, one of the most useful things you can do is to bring that out, your awareness away from the mind into your body. Again, Eckhart Tolle, he recommends focusing on the breath, which is a classic meditation practice. But you don't have to. You can focus on the place in your body that's drawing your attention, wherever that happens to be, and become aware of what the sensation is in your body. It seems like a kind of no thing. It seems like no big deal. Why would that help? But actually, it's a very powerful thing to do. When you ground it in sensory experience, then you can work with it.
Mm.
That's what I find.
Yeah, and I think we've run out of time now for the call, but I think that's a great place to end because I can certainly say, and I think anybody who's worked with Ian, and I would use this work in my practice as well a lot now, having learned it from Ian and other things myself, is that it sounds so simple, but the impact is huge, absolutely massive for people. You know, I would have felt it, you know, and seen it with other people, that just being those, just like the acceptance, the just listening, the acceptance, the being with your body.
It has a lot to do with presence, just with presence, being very present to what's happening. And most of us are not present to what's happening in our own bodies. So consequently, as a practitioner, we have to practice that ourselves in order that we can offer that presence to anybody else. But it is contagious. So being in the room with someone who is present to what's happening in their body, it will start to affect you in a positive way. Spontaneous healing will start to happen just by being in the room with someone. So it's not a doing. This is one of the hardest things to communicate to people, is it's not something that you really teach as a technique per se. It's a way of being, and it's an accepting, loving presence that you bring. That is actually the main tool, I think, is that you bring loving presence and acceptance. And the more that you can cultivate that in yourself and in your own life and in your own work, the more powerful things will happen without you needing to do anything. That to me is the ultimate healing, is where you do actually very little. What you do is you create the space within which the person can do it for themselves. That's the best.
So thank you very much, Ian, for joining us and for sharing all of that. I've certainly enjoyed it, and I'm sure everybody else has. I know, it's incredible, isn't it? And there's a couple more questions, but here as well, I see. But I think we should end now, I think, because people
You're the boss.
Are expecting it to be for the hour. So,
I said, you're the boss.
I am. Nope. Thank you very much. Now, I am delighted, I have to say, on a personal level, that Ian's actually doing the teleseminar, because I think it's a great way. So if anybody has any suggestions for him about things, topics that he might do them on in the future, I think he might be open to receiving those.
I might indeed. It's something that I've already been giving a lot of thought to, how I can work with this medium. So for me, this was just a chance to play around, to experiment with it. And thanks for that, Chris, and thanks for everybody who showed up.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I have weekly teleseminars anyway, so if you're on the list now, then I'll let you know about those. Actually, you're saying that I'm not having one next week because I'm going to be on holidays. I'm going to Spain tomorrow for a week's holiday, so I won't be doing one then. But when I'm back, then I will. So hopefully I'll meet some people that I haven't met before who would come through Ian on some of those as well. So thanks a million, and goodbye, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. Because I said, yeah, I think it's a pretty international audience. So thanks a million. See you.
Thanks,
bye.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.